This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book and to learn more about your favorite authors. This half hour is brought to you by Larson & Larson. They are my intellectual property lawyers, and they should be yours. In a little while, I'm going to be talking to Mary Higgins Clark. Now, for anyone who has heard her name, of course, you know that she has sold millions of books. They say 100 million in the United States. I think it's probably more by now. She's popular overseas. You go almost anywhere. I was in Paris one time and at a bookstore, and there they had all of her books translated into French. And of course, she's very popular in England. I think second only to Agatha Christie maybe third, Dorothy Sayers. Those are the three suspense writers that are so popular over there. And Mary Higgins Clark, when you think about her and if you've heard about her great success, you might think she's lived a charmed life and that everything has just been easy for her. But in fact, she's an inspiration to all of you who are thinking of writing, who have started to write and haven't continued to write, or just don't know what you want to do. Because Mary Higgins Clark faced so many difficulties in her life, and she's overcome everything, and it's wonderful to hear her story. As a young girl, her father died when she was very young, and her parent, once her father was gone, her mother had to take over the family, and with her and her brothers, and from there she, you know, went through Catholic school and worked hard as a student to get good grades, but she got it was difficult for her from the family point of view. She couldn't go on to college, but she did become a Pan-American stewardess. Now, in those days, and I say stewardess because that's what they called them in those days. That was back in 1949. She became a stewardess. And one of the things that's so fascinating is she was on the last flight out of Czechoslovakia, before the Russians basically closed down the entire Eastern Bloc. So her story was very fascinating, and as a matter of fact, she later on made a book out of it. But there's a lovely photo of her on the internet if people want to search for it, Mary Higgins Clark and Pan Am Flight, she was there taking a child out of the Soviet bloc before it got closed down. She got married a year later and had five children. And so she was doing okay. She thought life was just great. Unfortunately, her husband died. They had been married, as she says, and she never forgets it, 14 years and 9 months. And he died, leaving her with five young children to take care of. And at that point, she had always been a writer, writing at home, writing short stories. She's had some published, but she was not a novelist, and she had not written any major book. And so she was really having a difficult time, but she found time to write. She decided that she would have to write, and that was her biggest talent. She was working for an ad agency in Manhattan, sort of a madman kind of agency, where she was, of course, not an ad agent. She was doing the copy and things like that. And she knew if she wanted to get ahead, she would have to become a professional writer. So as she tells every writer she meets, and people will come up to her and people will say, well, I want to write. And she always says, well, she got up at 5 every morning and worked from 5 to 6:45. And that's every morning, morning after morning. That's what she would do. And I'm going to talk to her a little bit about her first book, which was called The Mount Vernon Love Story. And she wrote it, did quite a bit of research, and really had great hopes for it because it turned out to be an absolutely delightful book. And she had great hopes for it. But it was remanded and didn't take off. So meanwhile, she's continuing to write at 5 in the morning, and she writes the next book, Where Are the Children? Now, this book just took off. It became a best-selling book, and from that moment on, Mary Higgins Clark, the queen of suspense, was born. Now, it's a fascinating story how she continued working. Hold on a moment. I have to do something here. Find my file here. So she continued writing, and all the time that she's writing, she's working hard trying to also educate herself. And when she... Oh, one moment. Okay, I am back because I had to find my notes. And also, I'm getting ready to talk to Mary Higgins. When she was working, she became... she also went to school. So she was what she wanted always to tell people, and what she always likes to tell people that she meets, the aspiring writers, that if she could do it with 5 children, that you can do it if you have 1 or 2. It makes it real easy. So her life is an inspiring story, and I want to make sure that you listen now in. I'm going to talk to Mary Higgins, and then I will be back afterwards. I want to talk more about her work. So we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with Mary Higgins Clark.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Hi, I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200 extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
Are you a writer? Do you have a great idea for a movie? Want to know how to get started? Then join the Actors, Screenwriters, and Crew Production Group. They meet every month in Clearwater to talk about how to construct a winning script. Get your script read by the group, or just join in the fun. Contact Barbara Harrington, the best-selling author of Give Him Back to God, for time and location. She brings her experience as a screenwriter and casting director in such hit films as Cocoon and Absence of Malice to this lively group of film enthusiasts. So call Barbara, 727-572-6345, or email her at bharrington2@tampabay.rr.com. Get inspired, and one day you may hear those magic words, lights, camera, action. Call Barbara for details at 727-572-6345.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Rossi with a Z, and we're going to go straight into an interview with Mary Higgins Clark, who is in New York. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Patsy.
Hi. Well, it is an honor and such a great privilege to be able to welcome onto Joy on Paper the Queen of Suspense, Mary Higgins Clark. And as I have been telling my audiences for a long time, your work embodies everything that a writer wants in a book, and you are just so fantastic. I'm always inspired by your work, and of course, every year, I think almost every year, I can remember, you've got a new book coming out.
Well, actually, the total is 53 right now.
Whoa, that's fantastic.
There were some years of several in a year.
Well, of course, the new book.
I love to write.
Well, that's clear. Just from reading, one knows that the time and energy that you put into it is a work of joy.
It is a work, but you know, of joy. You know, there's a saying: if you want to be happy for a month, no. If you want to be happy for a year, win the lottery. If you want to be happy for life, love what you do. Now, there's another part that I don't say because it's not altruistic. If you want to be happy for a month, get married.
Oh, that's true.
That I don't believe.
I know.
Married.
Well, the new book is called As Time Goes By. And, of course, as always, you don't disappoint your readers. It's a fantastic book. It's another, you know, one of your thriller books that is based really on taking an ordinary person and putting them into a situation, much like Alfred Hitchcock liked to do with his characters, and making them face problems. And boy, do they face problems.
Well, you see, I like ordinary people, nice people, and it's as though something cuts across their, in front of them, cuts across and shakes up their lives. And this one, a 43-year-old Betsy, is accused of murdering her Alzheimer's husband. He had early Alzheimer's, has had it for 8 years. And the night before he is found dead in his bed, she says, "I can't take it anymore." And the next morning, Dr. Ted is found. When he gets to the funeral home, they realize that the back of his skull had been crushed. And she's accused of the murder. And then we take it from there.
And we take it from there with another thrilling story. And I really like that you brought back a very charming character called Elvira and her husband.
Elvira and Willie are everybody's favorite. I have them in the new book I'm working on because I know what they're going to say. When I use their names, I have no trouble writing their dialogue because I know them so well. And Elvira was named after the lady we lived next door to when I was very young. And Annie Potters was always cheerful. She had bright red hair. She wore jewelry, hands and fingers, and necklace and earrings. And she was a very homely woman, but she looked in the mirror and saw Cinderella.
And that's Elvira to a T.
And that's Elvira.
Exactly, and it's so much fun. I love seeing a character who, of course, wins the lottery and does something good with the money. You know, does something that helps other people.
Yes. Oh, she does. But I gave her my apartment in New York. Uh-huh. I have an apartment at 210 Central Park South. So I give her the number 211, which is across the street, which is Central Park. There's no house there. But I thought they moved from a very, very inexpensive place in Queens. But she keeps it just in case New York State bellies up and can't keep paying them.
Yeah, I like that attitude, too. You know, your work, of course, for people who have read your work, I think one of the biggest compliments to you is that I live in a condo complex, and they have a large library where everybody brings their books to share with everybody else. nobody ever brings your books. I mean, I would never bring your books downstairs. I said, no way. There's some books that you just never part with. And because the wonderful thing about your books, you know, you read them once and you can go back a few years later and go back and just enjoy it almost the same, even though you know the ending. It's sort of like you're like the only writer, except for Agatha Christie, that one can really do that. One can go back and reread and have that sort of same thrill. It's fantastic, your books.
Oh, that's so very kind. Well, I'm an Irish storyteller. I always said that at the cradle, the fairy godmothers come and give us gifts. Well, the one who might have given me the voice of a lark did not show up. The one who might have given me a sense of rhythm was not there. The one who might have made me sew a fine seam was also missing. But the one who showed up, and I'm glad she did, said, "You will be an Irish storyteller." And I'm awfully glad that lady showed up.
Absolutely, because it's the best thing to be. And you tell a story so beautifully, and it just takes... I think the wonderful thing about your books is one can just get it really immersed. You read it, and you're in that world. You create the world and make the character so real that for a little while, you know... It is perfect escape, and the nice thing is you know your audience, so you don't disappoint. You don't do extraneous things. You don't get too gory. You don't get too explicit, and I think that's important for your readers to know that.
Well, Alfred Hitchcock did the same thing. You never saw violence on stage. You saw, well, think of Psycho. You saw him looking through that, pushing aside that mirror or frame that was on the wall. You see her silhouette in the bathtub. You see the knife, and then you see blood running down the drain. You never see in his book, in his movies, anything explicit. And I've never used explicit sex. I just won't do it. When you think of Jane Eyre and Wuthering Heights, books that throb with passion, but it's not on camera. And I believe, I mean, God knows I'm not comparing myself to those writers, but that they could write about passion without explicit detail.
And I think it's not necessary because, as I said, with your books, the imagination just runs wild when one is reading your books. One of the nice things that nowadays people are doing, and I know that you've done it for years, is they have things called meetups where writers meet and get together. And I've really enjoyed attending some of these meetups and hearing writers talk to each other. And I know that you have a sort of a famous meetup group that you belong to. And
just the other night, Harlan Coben was there, and Linda Fairstein, and then a couple of others you wouldn't know as well. Justin Scott, but he writes with Clive Cussler, and it's just great to get Susan Isaacs, of course.
And I know it's called it's a first Tuesday of every month. And I was thinking when I read that the first time I read about that, I thought, well, that's a perfect title for a book.
Yes. Well, the Writers Roundtable.
Yeah.
And Lee Child. And it was funny, Harlan and Lee and I all hit number one on the Times bestseller list.
Wow, that's exciting. And I love Linda Fairstein. I love her Alexandra Cooper mysteries.
Sorry?
I love Linda Fairstein.
Oh, she's great.
Isn't she great?
This person, as well as being a very talented writer and very, very smart. She was a prosecutor, you know, before she just gave it up to be writing. And she prosecuted one of the most famous cases in New York, a preppy who murdered a 17-year-old girl.
Well, I'm hoping to talk to her soon. I was talking to Lawrence Block a few weeks ago, and he was telling me that you are like the sweetest writer, you know, of all. He just admires you so much.
Oh, Larry Block, I've known forever. I should have mentioned his name when I was thinking of the others in our group. Oh, he's the nicest guy in the world. And in fact, I have a sketch of the two of us sitting at a table with a glass of wine that was done by a New Yorker cartoonist. And I bought it from her and put it in on my wall. I love it.
Well, we were talking about all the different grandmasters of the Mystery Writers of America group, and you're at the top of his list. He admires you so much. He thinks you're so generous. He says one thing about you is that you're so generous with other writers and that you're so encouraging. And, of course, all my listeners, so many of my listeners are writing, and they're trying to write suspense stories. And I always say to them, if you're writing suspense, you really have to read Mary Higgins Clark, because you earned your title rightly. I don't know how many millions of books you've sold now. I know over 100 million in the States, and you just know how to tell that story. So your Irish godmother did a great service to all of us.
Oh, thank you. That's nice to hear. Well, I advise people who want to write suspense to read some of the good writers and kind of diagram the book. What is the main character? Who are the ones around her who are suspicious? And just the way you used to diagram a sentence 1,000 years ago, you can see a structure to the book that, if you really want to write suspense, would be kind of a guideline for you.
Well, all of your books really deserve to be diagrammed out by writers, because you do have that ability to keep the story going and right to the end and make the reader so happy with the ending. Before I go, I want to ask you, did you manage to see that television series Pan Am that was on a few years ago?
Oh, well, of course, I was a Pan Am host.
Well, that's why I asked, because when that program was on television, I was thinking about you, and you have such a sort of iconic photo of you as getting as a Pan Am stewardess.
Well, of course, I was 1949-50, so it wasn't the same era of that program, and it didn't catch me that much. I don't know why, but it didn't catch me, because when I was flying, there was only one hostess with eight members of the crew. We not only had a captain, a co-captain, a navigator, a radio man, another backup pilot, an engineer. I mean, it took a lot of people to fly a plane in those days, and there was always just one stewardess.
You look so darling in that photo of you coming out of Prague.
Oh, yes, that's the sweet one of when I brought over. That was of bringing over a little English orphan, and her mother was dying, and her best friend wanted to adopt the child. So she was 4 years old before they let her go. And it was so sad, because she was holding on to the woman who brought her, and she was a social worker. Then she attached herself to me on the plane, so that it was hard to persuade her to go to the adoptive mother. But, oh, the mother said, she looks exactly as I expected. So we got her to reach out her arms to the mother. And I'm sure it was a very happy life from then on, because I remember her name, Gillian Ann Richardson.
Wow. It is a beautiful picture, and people can see it on the net, because it says a lot about you and what you were like in those days and how inspiring you are today. I don't know, do I have time for one question before they take you away? Because I know you're on a schedule.
Oh, I think we're fine. They leave a few minutes.
Okay, I just wanted to know, is this story about the Mount Vernon book true about the $1 million? I have always wanted to know if that was true.
Which one is that?
The Mount Vernon book, Mount Vernon Love Story.
Oh, yes, Van Vernon love story. And, you know, it is accurate. Of course, I make up what they said, but what I think they said. But, I mean, when I wrote that, I was doing a radio show, and I did a four-minute program about them. And I thought, my God, we don't know George and Martha Washington. I had heard he married an older woman for her money. Yeah, she was 8 months older. She was 27 to his 26. She was the richest woman in Virginia. She was a widow, and the guys were tripping over each other in a parlor. She went through British lines to join him in Boston at the beginning of the Revolution, and she spent the whole winter in Valley Forge with him. You never hear that about them.
Exactly. And I always think that that book is so perfect, and they should give it in schools. You know, the students don't know much about, half the students don't seem to know who was the first president, and I think if they would give this in school, it would be very, 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 very good lesson for school, you know, for students.
Well, I think it's an easy read, and you get a much better picture. George Washington was a very tall man, maybe as much as 6'4". And the Native Americans gave him their finest compliment. He rides his horse like an Indian. He was a marvelous horseman. And, of course, a marvelous general. Think of going over from Trenton to Philadelphia on Christmas night. He was, and he had a great sense of humor that you don't hear about it all, because his pictures are all so solemn, because he had wooden teeth and was ashamed of them.
Well, I think you know, I love all of your books, but I think that that book is fantastic and really really makes George Washington a human, and it's a great book.
Oh, how nice of you. Well, it was my first baby, and I always loved it. It went nowhere in the beginning. I mean, it was nicely reviewed, nobody bought it. But then, about 14 years ago, I received a call from the Mount Vernon Historical Society. A direct descendant of George Washington's brother had heard me joke about the fact my first book had gone nowhere. She dug up a copy of it, and Mount Vernon called me, I mean the historical committee, and said they would like to give me $1,000 to reprint it. And I joked with my editor, well, maybe Simon and Schuster didn't love that book, but other people do. Said, Mary, I never read it. I have a copy. He called the next morning. He said, I love it. We'll work with them to do portraits from the house. Would you take $1 million for it?
Wow.
From 1,000 to 1,000,000 was a pretty good leap, I would say.
I would say so, and it's worth it. I remember when it came out, when the Mount Vernon Society sent, they were doing a promo and sending autographed copies, and I got one, and it was fantastic.
Well, what they do is they sell about 5,000 a year in the gift shop at Mount Vernon, and they also send it to donors who have given a certain amount of money.
Exactly.
So it was very much in circulation.
Yeah, it's a great book. And so we'll just say one more time that As Time Goes By is now out, and it's a great book, and I hope that everyone goes out and buys it, because it's a wonderful read. And here in Florida, where we are, we have a lot of people sitting around the pool and on the beach. It's just the perfect read.
Oh, that's very kind. Thank you so much.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Mary, so much for being on my program today. It's been absolutely thrilling for me.
Oh, it's mutual, Patsy.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Oh, wow. To talk to Mary Higgins Clark is like one of the greatest honors for anyone who's interested in books, because she is really inspirational. She's 88 years old. She's going to be 89. She's a Christmas Eve baby. And so it's just wonderful to talk to her, to see how not just how charming, but how bright she is and how eager she is to continue working. And as she said, she's working on her next book. I will hope to have her on the program again, because when you have somebody this inspirational, it's fantastic. As a matter of fact, you know, Simon and Schuster, who have been her publisher since the beginning, actually put her in their budget every year, because she is such a big part of their sales. And so it's not many writers are so important. And I know that it's been a thrilling experience for them to have her be so prolific year after year. And as I said, this latest book, you know, I as admired as much as I do the earlier books. You know, sometimes an author will sort of dwindle off near the end, but because of her fantastic interest in so many subjects and the basic themes that she always has something that's relevant to today. Sometimes she's had people, you know, young girls who've had abortions or were unmarried, or she touches on relevant subjects. And the subject in this book where she talks about a man with Alzheimer's, but she does it in a way that's both informative and fascinating. And as I said, this book is particularly, I think, a delightful read. And I can't recommend it more highly than that. So I want to take a quick little break. When I come back, I want to talk about a few things, including the last 2 days to enter the Writer's Digest writing contest.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Larson & Larson is a proud sponsor of Joy on Paper. Our law firm has the experience and knowledge to help you protect your valuable intellectual property. From trademark, copyright, and patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements, the attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, are here to advise you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com. That's Larson & Larson, your intellectual property attorneys.
Charles Ruttenberg Realty proudly sponsors Joy on Paper with Patsy Gill. Charles Ruttenberg sets the standard of excellence with residential and commercial real estate transactions and can help you on your next transaction, whether that is for a second home, investment, or downsizing. Call us today at 727-538-9200 extension 2 and allow me to help you. I'm John Rakowski, the broker at Charles Ruttenberg Realty.
Are you a writer? Do you have a great idea for a movie? Want to know how to get started? Then join the Actors, Screenwriters, and Crew Production Group. They meet every month in Clearwater to talk about how to construct a winning script, get your script read by the group, or just join in the fun. Contact Barbara Harrington, the best-selling author of Give Him Back to God, for time and location. She brings her experience as a screenwriter and casting director in such hit films as Cocoon and Absence of Malice to this lively group of film enthusiasts. So call Barbara, 727-572-6345, or email her at bharrington2@tampabay.rr.com. Get inspired, and one day you may hear those magic words, lights, camera, action. Call Barbara for details at 727-572-6345.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back after talking to Mary Higgins Clark, one of my favorite authors. One of the things I know that she always recommends to writers is that you join a writer's group. And she belongs to one, and of course, all of the writers in her group have turned out to be best-selling authors. But it's a lot of fun, and you don't know what will happen when you get into a group, but you encourage each other and have a party for when somebody gets published. And so it's all a lot of fun, and it's a great thing to do. There are quite a few nice groups here in the area. There's a sci-fi group if you're interested in science fiction. One of the nicest groups, as I think, is the Clearwater Writers Group, and it's headed by a wonderful organizer who is also a writer, and she's going to be on my program in a few weeks, and that's Bonsu Brandvik. And she's written a trilogy about the Bel Air Hotel, and so we're going to be talking to her. Her writers group meets on I think a Tuesday in every Tuesday. Not every Tuesday, I think one Tuesday in May in every month. And it's a group for both published and unpublished writers. It's just a fantastic group. They meet and they talk and read like a chapter from each of their book and each week. And you can see how other writers develop. And it's encouraging to you so that you develop and are ready to read your chapter. And I suggest that you go to the meetup.com. If you just look under writers in your area, you'll come up with quite a few little groups. There's a here in Clearwater, St. Petersburg, Tampa, and join a group and just get involved. And as Mary Higgins Clark says, find the time, make the time. If you're a morning person, get up at 5 o'clock, and if you're a night person, start at midnight. But whatever you do, just start writing. And as you know, there are 365 days in the year, generally speaking, and at the end of that, if you write a page a day, you have an entire book. So it's a lot of fun to challenge yourself, and just give it a try. Why not? And if you've already written something, you have 2 days to enter the Reader's Digest Writers Contest. It ends tomorrow. You still have time. There are so many different categories there. So if you've written poetry, rhyming, non-rhyming, a memoir, a play, a screenplay, any type of novel, novelette, there must be a category for you. So go to writersdigest.com and look at the page there and fill in an application and send in your work. One of the nice things, of course, about Writer's Digest is even if you only become a runner-up, it's important, and it's a wonderful thing to be able to put on your query letters that you're a runner-up. And quite a few writers, very famous writers, entered this contest. They weren't the winners, but they did get honorable mention, and it really helped them to get noticed. The grand prize, of course, is $5,000, and you get on the cover of the Writer's Digest, and it's fantastic, and you'll get a direct interview with, I think several agents. So it's an opportunity to really get yourself out there. Now, as I said, even if you're just honorably mentioned, and they have, I think, altogether maybe 500 honorable mentions in different categories, it's a great thing. What I've been asked lately by several people, what happens? They hear about people getting advances for books. Now, generally speaking, a new writer is not going to get an advance. If you're very, very lucky and you do get to an agent who's going to be able to sell your work, and it happens. I'm going to have in the next few months, I'm going to have several authors on who just managed to get through to an agent with a proper query letter, one that intrigued them, one that caught their interest, and one that encouraged them to read the first 5 pages, 25 pages, whatever the agent has asked for. Every agent asks for something different. So that is one of the reasons that when you are writing query letters, let me remind you again, you must know to whom you are addressing your letter. In this case nowadays, email, most of them don't want anything anything in the mail. You have to do it on email. But you have to know to whom you are addressing it, and you have to know the person, what type of work they want, and you have to know the type of work that the type of author that they've worked with before, because you will not generally find if an agent likes sci-fi, she's probably not going to want a historical romance. So it's important that you do your research. And that's very easy to do nowadays. In the old days, it would have been much more difficult. Now you go to the website of different agencies. You look on the list of agents, and it will tell you more or less what type of work they've done. It'll give them some background. I mean, sometimes they get into detail and they say, you know, they have three dogs, two cats, and a bird. And so you know that if you've got three cats, two dogs, and a bird in your book, it's much likely that the person's going to like it. So you have to know little things like that that are important when you're dealing with agents. They are human beings. Yes, they are. And they are good-hearted people. They really do want to help writers. Sometimes writers get to the point where they get so frustrated. They say, oh, they don't care about me. Nobody cares about me. But actually, the agents do care. What they are looking for, though, is they need something to sell, because that's how they live. And so they're looking for something that will sell. And you have to just convince them. And it's hard. It's not easy. I've spoken to some writers who have written query letters that were basically one paragraph, and that was it. And for some reason, perhaps because they got it just to the right person, somebody was interested in that particular subject. And I have a few, it's very strange. I was talking to an agent recently who wants a specific book. I mean, she really wants this specific thing. She wants a book about a young woman who grew up in New York, landed up in China, and was involved in a romance with a Russian. Now, I don't know why she wants this book, but this is like what she's got in her head. And I almost like, okay, I wish I could write that book. I don't know if I could do it. But I mean, she has such specific things she's looking for. Or she will say, I want a Gone with the Wind set in, I don't know, Azerbaijan, whatever. You have these agents who have things that they want, and sometimes they say it. It's funny enough, they say it on the webpage. So it's sort of fun to read the agency webpages, and you find out what these agents want. But you do have to address your query to the right person and send them exactly what they ask for. Don't send, if they say 5 pages, send them 5 pages. If they say 25 pages, send them 25 pages. Don't send them 50 pages, because then they just, you know, that little trash can up at the top there, that's what they click on. So you have to be very specific to each individual agent. And you have to think about whether you're going to submit to more than one agent at a time. Some agents say they want exclusive, like, the first run, so give them 6 weeks to answer. Generally speaking, nowadays you can write to more than one agent, but you have to be careful again. That's where the information comes from, the web page, to find out what they want. Now, if you're lucky enough and you find an agent who will read your work, read the first 5 pages, whatever, and then actually take your book and try to run with it, then you're a very, very lucky person. And some agents have sold new authors and gotten enormous advances. Generally speaking, as a matter of fact, when you think about it, and I'm going to talk to some authors who got major advances, the actual book doesn't probably pay for the advance. Now, in, you know, nonfiction, when they give an advance to some famous person, and they know in advance that they're not going to get the advance money back, but it's good publicity for them. Generally, with a novel, with fiction, even that, they probably would be very lucky to get their advance. So that's why not too many people get an advance. Generally, you'll get a contract without an advance. And the advantage, of course, with being with a big publisher is that they will do, first of all the in a bookstore, 80% of the books that are in that bookstore will be from one of the five big publishers. That's simply a fact. Independent writers, small publishing houses, certainly self-published work, very rarely gets into a bookstore. It's really hard to get your work into a bookstore or into a library, for that matter, if you are self-published. It can be done, but it takes a great deal of work and a great deal of effort to do it. That's why if you want to see yourself in Barnes & Noble, it's probably the best route is to go to try to get published by one of the big five. In that case, if they publish it and they get you into a bookstore, what they also will do, and what the part of their process is to get you the publicity to promote the book. And that means reviews in major magazines, newspapers, and major websites where they promote books. Again, this is something that is not the end-all and be-all. You cannot hope that the publisher will do all the publicity for you, even if you have one of the big publishers. So other than the ones who have, if they've given a writer $1 million advance, then they really, you know, pull out everything to get that writer noticed. And those are the ones that you'll probably see on television doing interviews because the big houses can pull strings and get a writer invited onto a major television program. And that's, of course, that does everything for you. And you get on Oprah or you get on one of the morning shows and you get to talk about your book. That is the best thing that can happen to you. And major publishing houses do that because they want to get their advance money back. So it's a thing that you have to think about when you're writing, whether you're going to go try to find an agent, try to get published by one of the big five, or if you're going to be an independent, an indie. As a matter of fact, I'm going to be talking very soon in the next few weeks, I think, to H.M. Ward. She's an indie author, and she just went out there and went just wild promoting her book and her books now, many books. And I know she's sold over 5 million books in a very few years. And again, it's something that if you're an independent author, you really have to put a lot of time and energy into promoting yourself. But it can be done, and it's lots of fun. So I want you to think about if, as I said, the Reader's Digest contest is tomorrow, it helps you to get noticed. It helps you to get an interview with an agent, and that's what you're looking for. One of the other things, if you are thinking about entering contests, just make sure that there are contests that require like a Writer's Digest. It's a small fee, but there are if a contest is asking you for a major fee, like hundreds of dollars or thousands. I heard of one woman who entered a poetry contest, really, for $500. That's ridiculous. That's a completely phony contest. And although they promise at the end to publish your poem, of course they can, you know, publish a book for practically nothing. And if they get a lot of people giving them $500, it's awful. So don't do that. Generally, the fee is like between $25 and $50 max to enter one of these contests. And if it's, check on it, make sure that it's a legitimate contest, one that you can write on a query letter. You can't write, you know, you don't want to write, I won, you know, XYZ contest, and it turns out to be one of these phony contests. So that doesn't impress an agent. And they all know what contests are good. So look for your favorite writer and see what contests they've won. Whatever your genre is, sci-fi, there are sci-fi contests, there are romance author contests. So look and see what contests would be ideal for you and enter a contest and try to get noticed, because that's the best way to the agent's heart. And that's what you want to do. Now, when you're thinking about it this weekend, I have already mentioned, on Tuesday I mentioned Barnes & Noble has a wonderful nook. It's a glow nook. It's fantastic. It's so easy to use and so nice. And I love the Barnes & Noble webpage. I suggest you go there. And it's a very neat webpage, very well organized, and you can find all sorts of books there. This weekend at the Barnes & Noble, both in Clearwater and in St. Petersburg, they have quite a few different events for Mother's Day, and it's a wonderful opportunity to take your kids there, to spend some time with them, and to really create some fun memories of just enjoying books. And nothing can beat it, because you cannot get that same experience, and the children do not get the same excitement. You can sit them in front of the computer screen and say, look at this, doesn't that look good? Now you really need to put the book in their hand and make them you want them to be little, you know, the bookworms, the greedy little bookworms who really want every book in the store. And of course, you have to just teach them self-control, that they can have one book a week, and make it into a really fun event that once a week, you know, that's 52 books in a year. And I'm sure you can manage it. It's not that expensive. You can always find books on sale at Barnes & Noble. And it's just fantastic. They have always a lovely children's area, well laid out, and easy to find the books that the kids want. And you check into all of the different children events that they have, which really encourage children to read. They often bring in authors to read their books, and that's always a thrilling thing for a child, to get an author to read a book and to sign it. And it becomes a treasured book, a book that they will keep for 50 years. And 50 years from now, they will look at it and say, oh, mommy brought me here. Or, oh, daddy was with me when I got this book. So it's a fantastic thing to do. And I hope that you will take time this weekend to go to Barnes & Noble and just to have fun and enjoy yourself. Find a great book. And, of course, I absolutely recommend Mary Higgins Clark, As Time Goes By, and just have a great time and just find your joy and share it and be happy. And thanks for joining me, and look forward to next Tuesday's show at 11 a.m. here on Tantalk Radio. Bye now.